the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM. You can call us at 4341790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 2534679 or an email at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Well, the news is not good at all if you're a Trident supporter. You know, my mother, I went to visit her yesterday, and she said to me she couldn't even eat her rice and peas on Sunday after the performance. And that performance, or non-performance, against the Zooks. And my golly, in a game that they have to win, I shall say this very slowly indeed, the Tridents, the defending champions, find themselves in all kinds of contortions. They are now 23-4-6. 10 overs and 4 balls gone. Charles, a duck. Graves, a duck. Mears, 10. Holder, a duck. Hope, 5. Carter, 5. Sackner has now come to the crease along with Ashley Nurse. And like the mighty Gabby is going to sing, I'm sure, this evening, Lord, send an answer for we. This is not a good performance from a team that would have won the championship. And if they lose this, well, my golly, I don't know what they're going to say in terms of the management team. And we are going to be discussing the CPL. Of course, we're going to take your calls a bit later on. But I can tell you that this is not a performance that will inspire confidence. On Zoom already, we've got, of course, my co-host, Dr. Andrew Ford. We're going to be looking at the stats as well. And we also have the former batting coach of the West Indies team, Toby Radford. Let's start with you, Toby. Good evening to you. We know we don't have too much of your time. In fact, it's now gone to 25 for the loss of 7 now. 25 for 7. So this game is not last as long as a snow cone, as we say in Barbados. Toby, what's going wrong with the Tridents? You need to manage them. We're not hearing you. I don't know if you can put your... okay, is your mic on now, Toby? Let's just double checking to see if you got him. All right, just trying to see if you can get Toby heard. Larry Mears, the technical director, is trying to see if he can do that. Toby, can we hear you now? Can you speak? Let's see if he can hear you. All right. Larry Mears is going to try to solve that problem, I would imagine. I don't know if I've changed my mic, if it will make a difference. Is he on? Let's try and see if we get Dr. Andrew Ford. Dr. Ford, any better luck with you? All right, well, we're having a problem here. We are indeed. We need to get this off. Our technical man, Larry Mears, is trying to see what he can do. Larry, anyhow, in the meantime, it's 25 for 7. I know that Serena Williams was also playing tennis. I got to the studios a bit late because she was actually playing as well. Larry, are we solved technically? Well, he tells me, hold on. So I have a lot of talking to do here. But this is not the kind of performance that would inspire confidence. There's no doubt about it. You know, the weekend against the Knight Riders, they had an opportunity to certainly win the game. And, you know, what it was, 60 runs, 24 balls. And in the end, they lost thanks to a man called Pollard. And now the Tridents up against the Zooks, having to get bigger numbers, as they would say. And in the final analysis, it was a situation where they could not get to 92 runs. But, you know, I've always said that small scores can give problems because you're lured into a false sense of security because you feel that, yes, 90, I can just play around the ball and do what I like. And, you know, that score rate will go from 4, which is manageable. And the final analysis, Barbados went into the last over having to get as many as 9 runs, and Roston Chase, who has done a very good job for the Zooks, a Barbadian, by the way, saw them to victory, the Zooks, and this really does not inspire a lot of confidence at all. And now they are struggling. Let me try and see if I can bring some updates for you. 26 for the loss of 7, 26 for 7. And if we look at that scorecard, again, Charles caught hit Marbo Sinclair Duck. Graves brought into the side leg before to green for Duck. Mears, it was caught by pouring off Navid Huck for 10. Then we had Holder, who's had a terrible time at this tournament, run out for Duck. Hope, well, how has he held on to his place, really? I think they need to explain that. Cotton Bowl Sinclair, 5. Carter, in and out of the side, run out for 5. Sackner's there on 2. Nurse has come, in fact, Nurse was caught by Shepherd for just making 1. So Reefer is there along now in terms of those to bat, Rashid Khan and Hayden Walt. So it looks very much as if this game could very well end very, very early. Can we try to see if we can get these guys online again? Larry Mears, can you speak, Toby? Let's see if we can pick you up. Are you hearing me, Toby? All right, I see your lips are going, Toby, but maybe we can try and send an SOS out and for Mr. Johnson to ensure that he's here, to ensure that we always have that backup. 26 for loss of 7, and of course, Reefer won. He got Rashid Khan and Walsh. There are the batsmen to come. Green, 4 overs, 2 maidens, 1 for 3. Sinclair, 4 overs, no maidens, 2 for 13. Tahir, 2 overs, no maidens, done for 5. And Hack bowling, 1 over and 5 balls, no maidens, and picking up 2 wickets for 4 runs. So as we try to get these technical difficulties, we want to apologize to our many listeners. We want to join Fazeer Muhammad a little bit later on the show. We also hope to join Wayne Lewis and Josh De Silva, who's very much in the bubble. Looking pretty good, young Josh De Silva. Keswick Williams, he is supposed to be very much with us as well. And we hope a little bit later on the show to go to Australia and talk to Ashley Gray. Now, an interesting personality. He's a poet, and he's actually written a book called The Unforgiven. You remember our boys went to South Africa, they call it that rebel tour, and he's been talking to some of them. He's had words with Lawrence Shaw, Herbert Chang, Alvin Kelly Turan, Derek Parry, Farouk Bacchus. He's also even spoken to Sylvester Clark's wife. He's spoken to Shaheem Clark, the son. Hartley Allen, Collis King, Everton Mattis, Albert Padmore. And in fact, he's also spoken to David Murray as well, Ray Rinter. These are the guys who actually went to that tour. And he's got some very interesting stuff to actually tell us on the show this evening. But when we look at the CPL, as we try to solve the technical problems out, we've got Toby Radford on the line. We also have on the line, of course, Dr. Andrew Ford. But when we look at the TKR, they've done so very well in this competition. Maybe if you can take a couple of calls, Larry, and keep the show going. 4341790, we'll certainly invite your calls while we try to solve that problem, that technical problem. But the TKR, they've done well, they've won all of their matches so far in this competition, And as well, the Zooks, the surprise package, because you know last year they didn't do well at all in this competition. And of course, in terms of the Amazon Warriors, they've been up and down. We also have the Talawars losing today. And, you know, they've been up and down as well. And the Patriots, they have not done well at all in this competition. So, as we try to get our technical challenges solved, can we take a call? No, not at all. I don't know. We seem to also have a little bit of a challenge in relation to the telephone as well. So, if I don't know if Mr. Johnson is wrong, but certainly we need to get someone in to help us in this hoping that we can get this sorted. But just talking about the Zooks, they've done very, very well. They've done very, very, very well in this competition. In fact, they've been the surprise package in this competition. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And the Patriots, they've really, really stumbled. And it looks as if, along with Barbados, because if Barbados lose here, well, I mean, it's almost calling it Wally. They are very much behind the eighth ball. But when you look at the Tridents, I mean, some games that they should have won. I mean, they should have won, I would say, against the TKR. They should have won against the Zooks. And in this big game, as we look at the scoreboard again, it's now 34-8. Unbelievable. 34-8. The last man to go, Reefer, gone for one. So it means now that Rashid Khan just waltzed to come. We are into over number 13, 35-8. 35-8. And we are going to try to see what we can do. What we're going to do now, let's try and see if we can pick up some of that ball-by-ball commentary.
Also getting four runs.
This is Tahi. Wrong the wicket this time to Satna. Sure. And he cuts down to the... Is this a different pitch Satna is playing on?
Well, I can't make excuses at all concerning the pitch. It's just poor batting, poor shot selection, and the mental approach to the game they're giving up. I mean, Jason Holder, as the leader of the team, and he needs some help sometimes when his team is under pressure. You look at his dismissal, he was not diving full forward to save his wicket. Just didn't have the energy, didn't have the purpose, and to me, he gived up.
13 overs have been bowled. It's 44-8. Naveen is going to continue. He'll be looking for a fiver, no doubt. He's got 3 for 5 from 2 overs. And he's going to be bowling to Mitchell Santner. He's on 15. Easily the top scorer in this innings. As Naveen over the wicket to the left-hander out of New Zealand. As Naveen is into him and he's pulling this. That's another good shot. They've gone for one. That's all they'll be. Gets up on one leg and just pulls it down to the deep square position. And they pick up one run. 41 feet. Satna's a 16. So back to my question. So after you pray, what's the next step?
Well, you have to try to get into the minds of the players as individuals and as a team. So you have to discuss the positive things that transpired in those two games. For example, they played 36 overs of very good cricket and they need to improve on the last 4 overs. And that was the problem there. So you have to talk about individual things and individual past performances.
Here's Naveen running away from us to bowl to the right-handed Rashid Khan. He's into Khan and he's edging, but no slip in place. Goes down to third man. Tahir picks it up.
Wow.
Sends the return in. This could be trouble as well.
Wow.
But they get home. Now 2 runs. Rashid Khan was, give him credit though, he was always looking for 2 as that ball was sent down to Tahir, who is at third man. Had that thrown be a little quicker and a little more powerful, who knows? Either Khan or Satna could have been in trouble. 43-8. Khan is on 3.
Yeah, excellent bit of feeling by Tahir to get to that ball. He had to run about, I would think, about 10, 15 meters to his left and picked up with one hand and rifling the throw. So even the elder statesman on the team, he's putting in a great effort on the field of play.
You could see them all pumped up, all these Ghana Amazon Warrior players. Naveen into Khan, and he's pushing this one out on the offside, and they decided against it. Kimo Paul is there doing the fielding at a point position. Score remains 43-8. We are into halfway through over number 14.
Yeah, you can look at tapes of the good performances of the individual. You have to get into their minds and say, listen, this is cricket, but we can still fight back. We are in the tournament still, that sort of thing. And work specifically with them and technically with them.
Naveen at the top of his mark, looks around at the field. Everybody's in position as far as he's concerned. So he starts his run in to bowl to the right-handed Rashid Khan. This is short, lifting. And Khan just bends and allows it to go through to be taken by the keeper. 43-8.
He's been brilliant with the ball. And this is what you want to see. And Ghana's own Warriors is known for their discipline where they're bowling. All right, they've been a little short on the runs. They have a new captain in Green. But they always seem to be very good at bowling in the right areas. Seldom do they look inconsistent.
Naveen, at the top of his mark. Been a great day today in terms of weather. It's been sunny. It's been cool. Some people think it was a little hot, but I'm inside the air condition, so it doesn't matter to me. Here's Khan flicking this ball towards the deep square leg. They've gone for one. They were thinking, you were hearing 2-2-2 all the time. But Romario Shepherd, who is at the deep square leg position, attack the ball. He's a strong individual. Attack the ball, picked it up, rifled it through it, and Rashid Khan did the sensible thing, and they settled for the one. 44-8.
Love that feeling display by Shepherd, coming off the boundary very quickly, and you have to have momentum in this position. Took up the ball with one hand, and he is excellent at throwing accurately, and that was a very good throw. Excellent bit of feeling by Shepherd.
Satna is going to take strike, the left-hander. So Naveen has come round the wicket to bowl to Mitchell Satna. He is on 16. Khan is on 4. 44-8. The partnership so far worth 17. As Naveen into Satna, and he's forward in defense, pushing it out on the onside. It's the end of the over from Naveen. He's now bowled 3 overs, 3 for 9. After 14 overs, it's 44-8.
Well, Santner looks the part. He's gotten 16 in 13 deliveries. So he's doing the right things. These guys would want to bat for the next remaining overs. One wicket to come after this one. So it's not a good sight at all. And what's the lotto numbers you would play, Colin Murray?
4-4, 4-8, 4-8, 4-4-8.
All right, I think we've solved our technical challenges here. We want to apologize, of course, to Toby and to Dr. Ford. And we also want to apologize to our many, many listeners. Of course, we're very much on Zoom. Thanks to Ronnie Clark. Thanks to you, our good friend Larry Mears and David Johnson, who's somewhere. Technology's is such a thing that he can stay at home and solve the problem. So let me say hello to you, Toby, all the way in England. How are you?
Good evening. Very good. You sung
loud and clear. And Dr. Ford?
Much better than I did 5 minutes ago.
Dr. Ford, can we hear you? Yes, we can.
Yeah. So we could always hear you, Andrew. Good night to you.
Maybe Doc, I didn't want to hear you.
No, air syringe.
Talk to me, Toby. What's going on with the Tridents? I mean, this is unbelievable. Tell me.
Yeah, well, I think once you lose a bit of confidence and get a couple of poor results, confidence is low. Running, you know, individually, collectively as a team, they just look in a very low place at the moment. And you know, just following the score now on Twitter this evening, you know, 40 odd for 5, 50 for 6, it looks like another tough day in the office for them. And it's hard to turn that around, isn't it? You know, sometimes you're working with sides who are winning, and you can't lose. And then occasionally it goes the other way, and just lack of confidence, I think. So something special has got to happen within that team to turn it around over the coming days.
So what would you tell them as a coach? I mean, before going into this match, you know, it's terrible. A team is down on confidence. I mean, they should have defeated TKR. They should have won against the Zooks. I mean, what would you say to a team that is so down and out? Toby, can you tell me?
I think often it's individual conversations, isn't it? Because, you know, it's an individual game played within a team context. So you've got to find out what's going on in the heads of each of those individual players. You've got to have a chat with Shea Hope privately. You've got to have a chat with different players, see where they're at. They've got to be working on their game. I'm sure they're working hard away from it. But it's turning, you know, a bit of a slump into some positives and confidence. You know, I think the challenge this year, clearly because of COVID, all the games are being played in one place, on one square. I haven't seen a huge amount of it in England. I've seen bits and pieces. But, you know, when you're using the same square all the time, the pitch becomes slow and low and it becomes turning pitches. And from what I see, you know, it's suiting spinners. It's suiting the guys who can bowl cutters and slower balls and people who hit the ball. And for me, you get two types of batters. You get those who are timers, stroke players who like a bit of pace on the ball. And then you have your Kieran Pollards who can bludgeon a ball and use their power and their strength. And I think playing on the pitches, these slow pitches in Trinidad day after day, it's going to suit more the spinner types, the hitting type, rather than the stroke players who like to sort of finesse the ball to the boundary. So that's the challenge of this tournament. Normally, you'd move from island to island and the hitters would have a chance in some places and the stroke players would have a chance in another place. And you'd get that mix of pitches. What you're getting this year is one place, one type of pitch, and that will suit some and it won't suit others.
Doc?
Well, I think we're seeing the bubble blues. We have some players who've left a bubble in the UK and now entered another bubble here, which is more attritional and restricted. We've had players not being able to practice the way that they would usually practice. We have pitches that are tiring. And psychologically, I think the Tridents are in a downward spiral, in a bad place. Their body language, their attitude, you can see that they're floundering and need a lifeline and unable to turn things around. What's been interesting about the series thus far is that we've been able to do just enough to lose from every different situation. So we've lost when we were ahead with and we had teams on the back foot chasing a high run rate. We've lost chasing low scores. So we've proven that whatever it takes to lose, we've been able to get that done. So I think it's a psychological problem with the group. And, you know, you can see the disappointment in some of the foreign signers, Can and Satner and some of the others. You know, there's everyone looks kind of dejected. And, you know, I guess it's something that they will learn. But this is what will happen to cricket. I'm sure in the IPL, we'll see some very strange things as well. And we'll see some players struggle and be up and down, but it's not ideal. So it just shows you what difference a season can make and what difference playing in just one place, the fatigue of playing in one location can do to a tournament. So I don't think this has been the best tournament of the IPL series. It's skewed and biased towards individuals who play a lot of cricket in Trinidad and who are familiar with the surroundings. And, you know, so it doesn't lead to very competitive cricket and the type of showpiece that we want. So in COVID, we can excuse kind of a backward step for the tournament, but at least we're getting to see some cricket.
You agree with that, Toby? Skewed and biased, strong words there by Doc. Did you agree with Doc on that?
Well, I do. I think he's talking a lot of good sense there. I mean, I think for some of those players, and you take a Jason Holder, Shea Hope, and these are not making excuses for them, but some of those guys have been away in a bubble in the UK for probably 2 or 3 months earlier in the summer. I think they were back in Barbados probably less than 5 days or fewer than 5 days before they were straight off to Trinidad in another bubble. And they've barely been home in the last 3.5 months. And that's no excuse for how they're playing, but it does have a mental effect. It is attritional. You know, and even if you're away from home for those times, you know, normally on a tour, you could go to a restaurant, you can eat out, you can get away from cricket, you can meet up with friends or family or whatever. This has been very much in England. They were within, you know, a couple of hotels the whole time on the ground. And then they've, from what I understand, they've gone to Trinidad and it's been pretty much the same for the last few weeks. So, you know, it's totally different circumstances. It's, you know, we're all in a new world at the moment, but it does have a mental effect. And clearly you take that mental attitude into the way that you play and you get a couple of bad results and you can then see why people may be mentally fatigued and drained and wondering how they're going to get a win from somewhere, you know.
Mm. Well, talking about a winner, we've got Keswick Williams, who is very much in this bubble. I like your cap there, Keswick. The Zooks, last year you performed really, I mean, it was terrible last year, but there's been a tremendous turnaround, Keswick Williams, and we want to welcome you to Mason and Guest. How are you, my friend? Your smile must be as large as Bridgetown, having defeated the Tridents. They couldn't get to 92. Talk to me about it, Keswick. Just put your mic on. Let's talk, Keswick. Are we hearing you? Yes, just turn
it
on. Okay, we got you covered now.
Yeah. No smiles yet. I mean, the job is not done. Still far from done. I mean, we came from a long way where I played for the Zooks for the first year and we only came out with one win. And last year wasn't too bad. We actually played against Barbados last year in the last preliminary game. If we had won, that would have gone to the playoff. So last year wasn't really too bad, but this year, everything turned around. The guys that we have this year is just, we don't have a lot of stars, but we just have impact players, guys that can come out and turn around a game at any point in time. And I guess the guys are doing that really, really well. I must say I'm really impressed as a player, so it feels good.
No, just take us through. I'm sure that Toby Radford, that you know very well. Take us through that Barbados game. Barbados up against the Zooks. You really didn't last as long as the snow cones, as we say in Barbados. And, you know, 92 runs, Barbados struggled. Take us through that game.
Well, honestly, we didn't bat well. Probably one of our worst batting innings we had in the CPL this year. We didn't bat well as a team. But what we usually do well every game is try to bowl well as a team and back up our batters, you know. And we came out in that game. Honestly, we weren't saying, "Yo, look, guys, you're going out there, we're going to win the game." Our plan was to make them work hard for the runs. No matter what, we're going to save every single. We're going to try our best to bowl a lot of that balls and see how far we could take the game. Everybody started to believe that we could have won the game after they lost Jason and after the 10th over.
Really?
We believe at that point, look, guys, at that point, after 10 overs, we said, look, we can win the game and we're going to go for the kill. We're not going to go and push them and see how far we're going to take them. We're going to win the game. You know, and we just went out there with the confidence and we execute and we did what we have to do. You know, and we came out chumps, which is really, really good on our part. I mean, a lot of people would say that it doesn't look good on probably Caribbean cricket. But at the end of the day, everybody have a job to do. The same way batters have runs to make, bowlers have wickets to take as well. And we did that better on the day, and I guess that's the reason why we came out chumps.
Let's come back to you, Toby. Now, I'm sure that Dr. Ford is going to give us an update very soon and tell us that the Tridents have recovered to be pretty close to 200 now. But, of course, I'm just kidding, Doc. Toby, I mean, but playing in these conditions, though, I mean, does that help the cricket at all?
Well, I mean, look, as I said before, it's going to suit certain types of players. You know, your good spinners on these slow, low turners are going to be difficult to get away. But there are players who like playing in on those type of pitches, who manipulate the ball well. As I said, if you're a powerful hitter, even on the slow pitches, you're still going to clear the ropes. But there'll be a number of batters in this tournament who prefer the ball coming on, who like to time the ball. They like a bit of pace on it. And I don't think that's what you're going to find. And the further you go into the tournament on a square that's being used all the time, clearly those pitches are only going to get slower and lower. And Kezzy with his very good little cutters are going to come in and his change-up bumpers into the hips.
I love it.
You know, so, but that's the skill, isn't it? So, those bowlers who've got really good skills and good cutters and good slower balls are going to be a handful to play on that type of pitch. And normally T20 is played on flat wickets. It's a batter's game, generally, small boundaries, flat wickets. And it's, you know, some would say, well, it's nice to potentially have wickets here that suit bowlers a little bit more. And the batters have to graft and work to get a competitive score, you know.
Now, by the way, 74 for 8, which represents a huge recovery by Barbados with Sacked on 31. And he's got Rashid Khan with him. He's on 19. We're into over number 18 now, so Barbados is 74 for 8. Kev, just talk to us about the pitches, though. I mean, it's really been bowler-friendly.
Honestly, I don't have a problem with the pitches.
You don't?
I don't have a problem.
How come? How come you don't have a problem with the pitches?
I mean, I love these wickets. These are the times. You see, the thing is, right, these wickets really shows how skillful you are as a bowler. Now, if you're
like
not
that.
Skillful, if you're running in and bowling fast and just trying to bowl fast and hit the deck, you're going to go for runs. Because that's the easiest thing to play on the wicket, pace.
Oh.
The hardest thing to play on the wicket is spin. But if you're a fast bowler that can bowl your Yorkers, your cutters, your leg cutters, your off cutters, your knuckleball, good bumper, good slow ball bumper, as long as you have that skill with you, you're going to succeed. If you look at the bowlers in the tournament, probably up there when it comes to most wickets. Myself, I think I'm fourth, and there's Scott, who's I think is third, who plays for us as well. And then Riyad, I think, is behind me, who plays for Sinkets. Look at how Riyad bowl. And then you can look at Keem as well, who bowls well for Guyana. Naveen, who bowls well for Guyana. These guys are guys who have skills. They can bowl leg cutters, off cutters, Yorkers, straw ball bumpers. So these are the kind of guys that will get success on these wickets. Yes, for batters, because I mean, T20 is a batter's game. Everybody want to see fours and six. But at the end of the day, these wickets for T20 cricket is not really, you know, too suitable. But we are professional and we have to learn to adjust. And if we can't adjust as professionals, it doesn't make sense that we play cricket, because you're going to have times like this where you have to look to grind it out and score runs.
Doc, your reaction to that before we go to Toby?
Well, Keswick, I just wanted to find out what's your view on the trend for the evening to night scores being lower than those during the day. Is just the dew, or is something else going on?
Okay, for example, today's game, Trinidad made 184. This game that's playing now is playing on the same wicket. Looking at the wickets that fall tonight for Barbados, is the guys not being aware of the situation, the runouts.
Mm.
You understand? And the shots that are being played. You can't fault a wicket in this situation. Satna is batting. He's a low order batsman. He's on 32.
Mm-hmm.
And he's batting smartly. The other day, again, Jamaica was playing a game and Glenn Phillip bat 20 overs in which he had to bat for his team. And he scored about 70-something. You have to get in on these type of wickets. It shows the kind of player you are. You have to get in. You can't come and play shots on these wickets like how you play shots on a St. Lucia wicket or a Jamaica wicket or a Barbados wicket. You have to get in on these wickets. And it shows the kind of talented player that you are.
Mm.
You can't come and play shots like that. The only player that I've seen come on these wickets and play shots when they want to, if they want to, is Johnson Charles and Rakim to a low extent. But at the end of the day, you see what happened.
Mm.
They get out cheaply. But at the end of the day, you have to get in on these wickets. These are wickets that you have to get in on.
Yeah, but a lot of professionals are here, you know, six teams. But yet the trend, this isn't something unique to the Tridents that we're seeing tonight. So if all things being equal and everyone having the same motivation, the same professionalism, it would suggest that there's some other factor that we may not be looking at. Since we've seen it, I've seen it on at least four occasions so far with the night matches being so different in scores today. But I do take your point that people have to get stuck in and have to bat, you know, the situation. Exactly. But do you think that it's been more challenging situational wise this tournament than some of the others that other CPLs you've been?
Yeah, it is challenging because I think it's fair to say that we're living in a new world. We're living in a new world. The guys are in a hotel 24/7. They can't go out. The most that we can go is go to the game room or to the pool. That's the most we can do. So that's something that's challenging. You don't have the chance to go out for a walk, take a bit of air, probably walk down to the savannah, take some air. You don't have that sort of time. You don't have that sort of leisure to walk out as you feel like. So that in itself is a change. Also, playing, we know the wickets in Trinidad. We know how these wickets play. Low, slow, Trinidad wickets. That's how it is. Playing cricket for a whole month on these wickets, you know how it's going to get. The players in this tournament know how it's going to be, especially the local players, right? So it shouldn't be a surprise that the wickets are playing like this. We know what we get when we come down here to play against Trinidad for one game and then left the next day. We know what we're going to get when we go and we play at Bryan Academy for one night and we left the next day. So if it's a continuous thing where it's playing over and over and over, you know it's going to get worse. You know it's going to deteriorate. So that's what I'm saying. A lot of teams, they're not playing awareness cricket.
Mm.
And we just do, that's what we do well. We have every day Sammy and our coach Andy Flower, Don Miller, Roddy Eswick. These guys plan for the cricket. They plan games, the way how these guys plan, the strategies that come out of these guys' mind, you wonder, yo, how did these guys even come up with this? But it's something that works. So we sit down, we plan, we strategize, and we make sure that when we go out there, let's just try to be different than everybody else.
Mm.
If we lose, this is how we came in the game. If we lose, people are not going to be surprised because St. Lucia have been losing for years. You know what happened? Let's just play that cricket that we haven't played in a long while. the awareness cricket. Be aware of the situation and play the situation. Like, for example, we're playing at Brian Lara. One side is way bigger than the other side. You bowl to the bigger side. Don't let anybody pull you on the short side. Okay. These are the things that we come up with. And we watch games and guys get pulled on the short side all the time. So it's just simple, simple little things that we do as a team. That's the reason, I guess, that's why we're so successful this year.
Okay, we're going to bring Fazir Muhammad in now, and we're going to come back to Toby Radford, because strategy is so vitally important. And I've always said for a long time that one of the problems in our cricket is that we're not strategic at all. And I didn't see that kind of strategy coming from the Tridents, hence their very poor performance. They've now lost the ninth wicket. But Fazir Muhammad, your overall assessment of the CPL, would you give it 10 out of 10, Fazir?
Not at all. I don't think you could give any tournament 10 out of 10 because there will always be challenges. And I think Keswick pointed out the issue with the wickets. And I think he's given a fair assumption, because it's not about making excuses. It's about being professional. You're playing the same surfaces day after day after day, and you've got to make the adjustments. This is what is expected of professional cricketers. So given all of the issues, Andrew, all of the challenges with staging a CPL in a single country, with two venues, one where, example, for those matches at the Queen's Park Oval, where they were even slower and lower than at the Brian Lara Cricket Academy. It's never going to be ideal. But I think, as Ian Bishop would have said before the start of this tournament, if it is that we can pull off this CPL at one venue without too many hitches, and yes, there might be issues with the quality of the cricket and the nature of the pitches. But I think at the end of it all, if come September the 10th and we crown a champion, whoever that champion is, and we're satisfied that the best would have been done for a safe tournament, I think that would be to the enormous credit, not just of Trinidad and Tobago, but the entire Caribbean, and indeed all of the cricketers themselves who would have exercised the discipline to stay in their biosecure environment. Because I appreciate what the point that Keswick is making. It has to be difficult to be cooped up in a room all the time, never mind what you can do online or watch television and so on, because you can't even take in some fresh air, go out for a lime round the savannah, have some coconut water or whatever it is. So I do appreciate those challenges. So I think, no, it's not going to be 10 out of 10. There will be challenges, there will be limitations. But at the end of the day, I think the authorities, the players, everyone has really contributed extremely well so far.
Toby, is CPL helping West Indies cricket?
Well, look, it's been running for a number of years now.
And since 2013.
I think it's been a good... Yeah, exactly. And I think it's given these players an opportunity to mix with some of the best players from around the world, to learn from them. You know, as Keswick said, Andy Flower's come in and done a really good job as head coach, who's brought other coaches in with ideas, the planning, the preparation, all the things that have just been talked about. So I would say, yes, it is doing a good job. You do need good surfaces. Having said that, the minute you turn up and you know the surfaces, again, as has already been said, it is about preparation, planning. You've got to go and play on that surface and beat the team that you're up against. You might need to change your batting order. You might need to put guys who normally bat six or seven up higher to muscle it on slow wick. You've got to look at how you're going to play whatever you're up against. So it is all about planning and preparation, and then going with a very positive attitude to try and win those games. So, you know, you've got to adjust to the surface that you're on. Perfect world, you'd be on good surfaces that would suit everyone and the best team with, but you've got to somehow, you've got to find a way around it, you know, whatever you're given on any given day.
Mm-hmm. If you had to make any recommendations, Toby, you're going to certainly ask Fazir Muhammad that as well, to the CPL, it's been around since 2013. What would you say to them? Having watched it, you've been involved as the West Indies batting coach, what would you recommend to improve it?
Well, funnily enough, I haven't been involved. I've seen bits of it, but I've generally been with the main team over those years, and that would be my period to get back to the UK and have a bit of family time. So I've watched it from afar. I've never actually been involved in it. I mean, I've seen bits of it on TV. I speak to the guys, so I've got a general feeling of it. My personal feeling is clearly it's better when you go to different venues and you play on different pitches and different size ground. And you get, by the end of the tournament, you get everyone will have had a fair share of things that work for them and things that don't. And you'll get your genuine winner. This is a totally different year. It's a different world we live in. I agree with Fazir. You know, if you get the tournament done, then fantastic on the Caribbean and everyone who's been involved, get the tournament through and get a winner at the end of it. But, you know, I would say, yeah, that's fantastic.
what I would like to see is keep trying to produce good surfaces, because good surfaces make good cricketers, make good cricket, and that's what people want to watch.
Mm-hmm. Doc?
Just a question for Fazer. You know, he's got through, Trinidad's got through their elections. There's now a bit of a COVID spike now, the second wave. Usually CPL in Trinidad would be a big event, large crowds, everybody supporting the TKR. What's the feeling like, the interest in the tournament like in on the ground in Trinidad?
I think there's significant interest, especially with the elections now over. It's been over for a couple of weeks now. We've got a government installed, so that is out of the way. Of course, COVID-19 is a major challenge because the number of fatalities would have tripled in the space of 15 days. We had 8 fatalities to the end of April, and now without any fatality for 3 months, we're now up to 25. So that tells you the challenge that we're facing in that regard. The number of positive tests are well over 1,000 at the moment. So there are major challenges in that regard. And that's why the CPL, even without the fans and even without the fans coming into the stadia, it's a welcome relief. It gives people something to look forward to, whether it's a 10 o'clock in the morning match, whether it's an evening match, whether as on the weekend, it's an afternoon match. You hear a lot of people talking about TKR. They're talking about how the players are performing. There's a level of excitement. And also there's a further distraction from the major issue that surrounds Trinidad and Tobago football, where there's a concern that we could either be suspended or banned by FIFA because of the legal challenge that is going on right now with the deposed administration of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association. So, for what it's worth, CPL has come at the right time for the people of Trinidad and Tobago to offer them some welcome distractions.
Keswick?
What about the exit? And did the Trinidad and Tobago government have to make a contribution in order to allow the tournament to be played in Trinidad?
Well, we haven't been made aware of any financial details. As best as we could understand it, what the Trinidad and Tobago government would have done would have been to facilitate, because I think if it were to be made public, if it is the case that significant sums of money, millions of US dollars would have been paid to CPL for the tournament to be played here, then there would be a real hue and cry. Because right now, Trinidad and Tobago is in deep financial trouble. Indeed, COVID-19 has made it worse. I think we're all facing challenges throughout the Caribbean, throughout the world. And indeed, it became an election issue as to why our doors are being opened up for CPL when nationals of Trinidad and Tobago have not been able to return to the country for months on end. So I would suspect that what would have been done by the Trinidad and Tobago authorities would have been more by way of facilitation, by providing facilities, providing venues, providing locations, making all of the necessary arrangements to allow for players to be tested regularly together with officials and so on. So I suspect it's more in kind than in cash. But at the end of the day, certainly for Trinidad and Tobago, the authorities, not just the government, I think the people of Trinidad and Tobago see this as an opportunity to show themselves as being able to organize a successful tournament in a period of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Let's come back to you now, Keswick. In terms of the bubble, any easing in terms of the restrictions? Last week, we had Kyle Mayers on the show, and he said it was living in a prison.
Yeah, it is somewhat living in a prison. It's the time that we're living in. It's a question of, this is something that we have to do. It's a sad case. It's really, really a sad case. But at the end of the day, it's something that we have to do. It's a bit easier now in the hotel, whereby you can go to the pool whenever you want. Before, there was the time slot for your team to go to the pool, the time slot for the gym, and all that. You can go whenever you want, whatever time you want, and stuff like that. So that's the only ease. And the stuff can come into the hotel now, but the problem that you go to get it in, It's certain days as well, and certain time, you know, but at least you can get stuff in. Like if I need something for cricket, like for example, the other day I needed some tights, some short tights, because I just realized that I had only long tights. So I ordered some in, you know, so that before that, nothing could have came in.
Ooh.
So, you know, so I get that in, you know, and stuff like that. So it's easier now that you can move around, but you still have to wear your mask. You still have to wear your mask. Sometimes you do forget because it's not really a norm, but it's been everybody has to wear a mask, and that's a challenging thing. Sometimes you get up on mornings, head for breakfast. When you reach the breakfast room, you're like, yo, I have to wear my mask. You have to come back to your room for your mask and go back up and stuff. So that's the only challenging thing, but it's getting easier now. The tournament is finished by next week. Can't wait to go home.
Are you bored? Are you bored, Keswick?
No, I'm not bored, to be honest. I spend most of my time talking to my girl, so she keeps my company.
Your girl, you said? You said your girl?
Yeah, my girlfriend. So
you see Fazia smirking, talk, you see? So that's why I asked the question again. I see Fazia smirking, you see? Right. So she's been keeping your company.
Yeah, definitely. She's been keeping my company, making sure that I'm not bored, and she always talks to me. So I mean, we have a good relationship. We have a good rapport. So I mean, I'm cool. I'm fine. I'm good now. I see her in a couple of days' time. So.
Oh yes, that's a cheat. You can't miss that lovely there. And I imagine she's from St. Vincent. Okay, stay with us. When we come back, we're going to open the lines as well. We're going to check and see what the Tridents have not done. Really, it's been very terrible for them. Oh my golly! I mean, as I said, my mother said she could even eat a rice and peas on Sunday after that terrible performance by the Tridents. We want to thank our friends at Barbados Lottery promoting youth sport and culture. They've been with us for quite a long time. The innings close at 92. Barbados, Charles, a duck. Graves, a duck. Mayors, 10 holder. A duck, he's not had a good time at all. Not the whole of the glory there, Jason. Hope, well, 5. Carter, 5. Sackner got 38. Nurse, 1. Reefer, 1. Can, 19. And Walsh towards the end, 10. Barbados all up for 92 off the last ball. And in terms of the wickets, Sinclair, 2 for 13. And we also have Paul, 2 overs, nobody's done for 19. Neville Al-Haq picking up 4 for 14 from 4 overs. And Imran Tahir, very tight, no wickets, 3 overs, nobody's done for 18. So Barbados to the Moncton to climb the Tridents, all out for 92. Fazia Mohammed, what have you done to the Tridents in Trinidad?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's an element of just the reaction of having won the title the year before. Well, on Saturday, of course, they couldn't chase down 92. Maybe this time around, they'll be able to defend 92. We'll have to wait and see. But I suppose that there will always be these issues when you're talking about a T20 format and such a congested tournament where if you suddenly get into a slide, sometimes it's difficult to pick yourselves up. And I'm sure Toby would be well aware of that environment, not just with the West Indies, but at Middlesex as well. When you're virtually playing cricket back to back, how do you find the time in between to draw breath and realize, look, guys, we really need to settle down. It's no point going after one another if that is what is happening. And I know it can be a very difficult environment. And for those who would have experienced playing the game at the highest level, I suspect that it's really about trying to get players to clear their heads and recognize once there's a mathematical chance, there is still hope. So there's no point going on about what would have gone on before and just trying to move forward. I know it's easier said than done, but it's probably what you have to do if you want to really try to finish off strong, even if they don't make it to the semifinals, which looks unlikely at this stage, unless they can pull off a victory this evening. But it really is about trying to finish strong because there's professional pride as well. Let's not forget there's an IPL. The timing of the matches allows for the eyes of the world, especially India, to have a look at players in their prime time while this CPL is going on. So there's always an opportunity for players to put themselves in the shop window.
We've now been joined by Roger Harper, the lead selector. Roger, I know that you've been paying close attention to the CPL as the lead selector. Your overall assessment of the CPL this year? Are you unhappy?
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening, everyone. I think that, yes, we expected to have some better cricket. I think that at times a lot of power was played, was put in, a lot of power play was put in and not enough brain play. But I think in the circumstances, we're happy to have some cricket, but yes, we expected to have some better performances generally, especially from the batting side of things.
Well, what about the pitches, though? You think this would have contributed, the pitches?
Well, You certainly, ideally, you'd like to have pitches more conducive to stroke play from the get-go. But I think the batsmen that have generally succeeded have adapted very well. They have given themselves some time to get in and then capitalize later. And I think that some players have not gotten that memo yet. And I think some teams are still trying to score all the runs up front when the runs are being scored at the back end.
Mm. As lead selector, we could, Fazer, if you feel free to jump in and ask lead selector Roger Harper, of course, Dr. Ford. As the lead selector, are you very concerned, very disappointed with the overall standard of the CPL?
Andrew, like I said earlier, we would have liked to have seen some better performances from the batting side of things, right? And there's still some opportunity for guys to showcase how good they can play and how well they can adapt. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen some brilliance already. I think that 100 from Puran was certainly an outstanding inning. Mm-hmm. And he certainly looked as though he was playing on a different pitch. And, of course, Pollard did what Pollard does. Mm. But as well, like I said, you know, I had hoped to see some smarter cricket in certain situations as well.
Mm. Fazer or Dr. Ford, do you want to jump in? Fazer?
I suppose, Roger, good evening to you. The question that I would have for you is that how difficult is it for you as a selector and indeed the team of selectors in a time when you're not sure what's happening next, because there's no World T20 for the men this year. The women had their tournament earlier this year. And basically, you're looking at players, you're assessing talents without any clear idea as to when next you're going to be able to give them a run in whatever tournament there might be. How difficult is that from a selection point of view?
Well, we still have to be prepared, you know, just in case something pops up or there is some sort of series that, you know, we have to put a team together for. So it's an opportunity for us to look at the players and see, you know, what we can learn about them and who would be suited to building and having to develop a good T20 team going forward.
And just in relation to that, one more question, allow me, as far as I'm sure you would have had the nucleus of the team in mind if the tournament was going to be played in October, November of this year. Have you seen anything so far in this CPL of 2020 that would have allowed you to entertain one or two other players for a tournament that may be played next year?
Well, certainly we've had a player like Kyle Mears has shown that, you know, he's somebody that you have to keep an eye on. And Roston Chase has shown that he can play some smart cricket regardless of the format. I think what you look at especially is the players who have been in and around the T20 squad, whether they were in the last squad or have been on the fringe, and you look closely at their performances as well. And I think in some cases, you know, we'd hope to see a better showing from some of them. But we haven't seen a lot of new players emerge to really, you know, say to us that, listen, this is somebody that, you know, you have to consider right at this point. I think I must mention young Ashmead Ned, who has shown that he can compete at whatever level he has been thrown in at. You know, he had a couple of games for the Warriors and he's performed creditably. So I think that's another one to really keep an eye on.
Doc?
Roger, that tournament that we'll be preparing for, COVID allowing, will be on different services in Australia, totally the opposite of what we're playing on. And you've mentioned Pollard, Puran, but the core of that squad, the prospective squad that we would have had, have been underperforming thus far in the tournament. You also see the variations in fitness and that sort of thing. How difficult do you think it will be for you two and your team to go forward with what would have been a more likely group that you would have had had COVID not intervened? Because the data that you're getting from the tournament and also looking at the fitness and how that those requirements, the requirements to play and to be fit, how difficult do you think it will be to to put that group together when the time comes?
Well, I think what's on the horizon is possibly a tour of New Zealand. That hasn't been really finalized yet, as far as I know, but that seems to be it. So we'll have to use whatever information we can gain from this tournament here and utilize this as best as possible to put our squad together. We've seen a lot of the players in the last T20 series that we played. That would have been against Sri Lanka, I think it was. And we'll have to use the information from there and what we learned from here and put the squad together as best as possible. I think with the advent of COVID, nothing is the same, right? So we cannot look to operate as we have been doing in the past. We have to work with what we have and do the best we can.
Mm-hmm. Rogers, just before we go back to Toby and congratulate him on his big job there in Bangladesh, understand the Bucks are very big as well, Toby. Is there a possibility that we... just kidding, Toby. Is there a possibility, Roger, that we may get some first-class cricket towards the end of the year? Any word on that? Have they been talking to you?
I haven't gotten any word on that. We're still awaiting what the domestic program will be and how that will go on. I'm looking out for some word on that, a definite word on that too.
I see. Well, I'm hearing that there is a possibility, but because of COVID, it may be very difficult. Fezzy, you're pretty close to the Cricket West Indies. Have you heard anything about the possibility of some first-class cricket being played towards the end of the year?
Yes, I am as close to Cricket West Indies as Saturn is to planet Earth, really, because I don't really... I'm certainly not like you, who would have your pulse on everything happening, even within the boardroom. Sometimes I think you know what they're going to decide even before they've decided it.
Yes, yes.
At the West Indies board level. So I'm not aware of anything that's happening at this stage. But I think common sense would tell you that I'm sure they're going to look at this CPL as a bit of a template to mm-hmm. see what can be done mm-hmm. in our different territories, because you don't want to play our regional first-class tournament at one venue. As Toby said, part of the attraction of a CPL or any tournament is playing in different venues, different countries. I certainly still think the 2013 CPL, the inaugural season, was probably the best ever because it was new, it was fresh. All the matches were played at night, and that certainly added to the atmosphere. Talking about first-class cricket is a very different situation. Mm. You don't expect to get any spectator support. So therefore, they're going to have to look at this CPL, see what was done, see what is possible, what is practical, what can be done. Can we have biosecure venues throughout the Caribbean to allow for the tournament to be played within a manageable cost? Because all our Caribbean territories face different challenges when it comes to cost. And that's something that we've all got to come to the reality too, that we're talking about a significant ramping up of cost when you're talking about testing and all of those protocols. So there are lots of challenges involved. But I think if there's a real commitment to stage a first-class tournament as best as we can, it could come off. But I think they've got to be sure that they've got everything in place to because the last thing you'll want is to have a spike in infections in any territory because of cricket.
Mm-hmm. Toby, looking forward to your new assignment?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Due to start, I think this is the third week of September, and head straight out to Sri Lanka. The first team are going to be in Sri Lanka, and at the same time, we're going to take a HPC team. So my role with Bangladesh will be very similar to the one when I first came to Barbados, actually, with the West Indies. Taking that sort of the best sort of 19, 20, 21-year-olds and hopefully sort of polishing them up and handing them on to the international side. So it's a role I look forward to, and it's one that obviously I enjoyed, 10 years ago now in the Caribbean.
How long is it for, may I ask?
It's a year's contract initially.
Only a year?
Yeah, only a year. Well,
you got it impressed in the year then? You got it impressed in the year?
I think for them really... Yeah, then sort of testing me out, see if I know what I'm doing. And for me, if it works both ways, then hopefully we'll extend it. But, I'd like to think that it'll be something that we would extend and can go in and hopefully make a bit of a difference for them. I mean, there's a lot of talented young players. The under-19s won the World Cup. So there's clearly, a batch of very good young players to work with. And I think for me as a coach, obviously, I've coached in England. I've coached in the Caribbean for a number of years. It'll be the first time I've actually gone and run a side in Asia. So, you know, I think I'll be learning on the job as well, which will be great. So you keep learning, don't you?
Mm. Doc?
Mm. Toby, how difficult is it for you as a professional to be away from home so much? You know, you've worked in so many different places. You've worked usually when there's no COVID, but how difficult is it to do that?
It's tough. And when I was with the West Indies, I mean, although I was based in the UK in Cardiff, and my wife has a good job here, my son was here, I'd be away probably 7 months a year. So you'd be on the tours if it was a home series in the Caribbean. Again, I'm away from home, really. So I'd get little gaps in between tours where I'd come home probably for 4 or 5 weeks and then I'd be off again. This has been a long gap now. I mean, I finished virtually a year ago there. And then the last year, most of the work I've done has been with the ECB, coaching coaches here. And I've done a lot of online coaching, Zoom, masterclasses, that sort of stuff. So this is the first time where I've really gone away again in the last year. But they've been quite flexible. They've said that I can go in and run it in blocks. So if I want to go and do 50 days and then come back for a few weeks, I can do that and then go back and do. So I can kind of spread it over the year in blocks, which works well. I'm not going to take the family over, as I say, you know, lads in school, wife's got a good job here. So, but I think it's flexible enough that I go do a good job and still come back and have enough time with the family as well within the year. So, you know, I think it should be good all ways around.
434.
Do you think that this Zoom?
Just before you go, Doc, I just want to encourage our listeners to join us. 434-1790. Please call and participate. Yes, Doc. Yes, Doc.
I was asking Toby if he thinks the Zoom method of coaching will be embraced by other coaches and will become a way of getting, you know, quality coaches without actually having to fly them in.
I think it can be. And I mean, it's been really interesting this year with some of the players I've been working with over the last 6 months. I mean, it really took off when lockdown started here back in March in the UK. And I did a lot. I did a mix of where I'd be talking to sort of groups of 70 odd coaches or players in different counties and whatever. And then private individual sessions where players would send videos over and I'd analyze them and then have a chat like this on what I'd seen on the video. And there's some of the players have had really good seasons. And I'm thinking, well, I haven't even actually done hands. I've not thrown one ball at them. So it does work. It, in a way, it was a bit of a test, but I've been really pleased how successful it's been. And I think other people are starting to do it now. It's really cottoning on as an idea. And, you know, as we've all said, we're in new territory in the way the world is at the moment. So I've really enjoyed doing it. I'm seeing benefit. Players are seeing benefit. Obviously, in the perfect world, you'll do a bit of both. You'll see stuff, you'll help, and then you'll go and do a hands-on coaching session with them. But it's clearly worked, and I think I'll carry on doing it in and around the other stuff that I do. And I think, to answer your question, I think other people will start to add it to their coaching sort of repertoire as well.
All right, Doc, let's take a first call. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests. Welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, Andrew.
Yes, good evening.
Dr. Ford and your guest.
Yeah, yes.
Now, I must say, I'm a bit bemused of the last three matches by the Trident. Now, the Trident are carrying more tail in the game when they come to batting than a Star Diamond or Singing Angel Kite.
Oh, dear.
Now, you cannot. We have been always talking about this batting of how good Holder can bat. Holder is for the tail end of 2020, not batting at number four. You cannot or should not be having three batsmen, two batsmen and an all-rounder. In Graves, an all-rounder, I call him that. And you got Brooks and Carter. And you are having them on the bench, and Holder coming at four. There should have been a movement of hope down the order, as it was seen it was done. I'm bringing Carter. The guy, if the rules suggest that, there must be X amount of games, but at the expense of who? Right? I'm not saying that he should not have played, but he played too many games at that point in time when you were struggling. We should have won the last two matches. Bad bowling changes. You realize the boy was hurt. I don't think you're feeling it after he batted against Trinidad, Mears. Mears, it was rather unfortunate. Holder's batting in the wrong position.
Keswick, are you surprised that Holder's batting so high in the Trident side?
I honestly rate Holder really highly. I think he's a really good player. But I think he's a player that should float. He should be a float player in the team, like Russell. So let's just say you lose some early wickets, save him until like the last six, last seven, because he can strike the ball. We know he can strike the ball. I would prefer to see Holder batting the last 10 overs than to be in so early. That's what I would prefer to see. But at the end of the day, he's a captain. I don't know what their discussion and their team meeting is like, and I don't know what their plans are like. So nobody knows what their plans are like. Everybody's home watching TV. They don't know what the plans are like in the dressing room. So the most that spectators can do is just look on and make comments. But nobody don't know their plans, because if at the end of the day, Tridents did come out and win games, everybody would have said, oh, great, well done. Like, yeah, for one example, the other day we won Tridents, right? And the penultimate over, everybody's looking, it's either Kez or Scotty is going to bowl these death overs, right? I walk up to Sammy, me, Fletcher, and Ruston, and we said, yo, bowl Glenn, because at the end of the day, Glenn bowled leg spin and he bowled really flat and straight. Sammy wanted to do it. But you know what happened? He came and make a team discussion and said, listen, should I do this? Because listen, if we lose as a team. Right. That's the nature of Zook's cricket. If we lose as a team. Not no one man make a decision and we lose and we blame him. Now, Glenn bowled over, did really well, and Chase finished, which everybody was probably surprised that I didn't bowl the last over. But I wasn't surprised that Chase bowled the last over, because we know what we're seeing at practice. We know what we're discussing in team meetings.
On the point of principle,
so nobody knows. Now, everybody at the end of the day start saying, oh, well done, Sammy. Well done, Sammy. Good thinking. If the skipper made that decision and we had lost that game, everybody would have gone on the skipper. But nobody wouldn't have known the plans in the dressing room. So sometimes you have to allow the situation and you see certain things happen, because we don't know what the team plan is. Right? It's unfortunate that these guys are losing now, because they have a very good team and a very good batting lineup. These guys have power right down to the end. Hayden Walsh is batting at 11. It shows the amount of power that Barbados Tridents have. It's just that this tournament, they're not kicking off. And it's unfortunate.
Andrew.
Yes, sir.
Those 92 runs, right? Those 93 runs. The St. Lucia Zooks could not have beaten UWIUE team with them 92 runs in playing down there. Couldn't.
No.
Or whoever they couldn't beat, and I am a Blues. Couldn't beat UE down there, and I'm a Blues. And I just bring a team. It is bad positioning, and Holder coming in the position that he's coming. We need people to bat up at the top end. Brooke should be in the side. Unless Brooke is sick and nobody is saying anything, or unless Carter is not 100% fit, that is the only way that those two players should not be in the squad. That's the only way. Now you got the Harden is in the side. Why Harden cannot get in the bowling lineup? He would have been an asset against Trinidad. Everybody know that Pollard is good.
Fazir,
you need some pace at Pollard.
Yes. Okay. Thanks for your contribution, Randolph. 4341790. We can take another call, can we? In a minute or two. Fazir, surprised that Holder's batting so high in the Barbados side?
Not really, and I think Keswick touched on an important point. I mean, when you're winning, everybody's on your side. When you're losing, everybody's against you. That's the nature of sport. And the thing is, the one point I'll disagree with Keswick is that fans will always have opinions, and fans sure. go with the flow. And therefore, as a professional sportsman or woman, you're expected to appreciate that this is how the fans will be. And the media, possibly to a lesser extent, because you do expect to see a level of awareness and appreciation from the media as well. So I don't think players should necessarily get upset or angry when they hear people criticizing their performance, because they would be judging it on what happened, for example, in 2019. So again, this is the nature of competitive sport, and this is why we follow competitive sport. I've been waiting 30 years for Liverpool to win a premiership, to win the English Premier League. They've finally won it in the era of COVID-19, with not a, a fan in sight, so you couldn't get the real vibe of it. But still, it's a it's a title that has been won. Will they win another one next year? Who knows? They might finish seventh in the standings. I don't know. And then everyone will be piling on as to who should be sacked, who should be gotten rid of, and so on. That is the nature of sport. That is the nature of competitive sport. It's an environment where you're always under the microscope. You are as good as your last performance. People will talk about Holden now, but they wouldn't talk about his double 100 against England and how he was such a fantastic captain for the West Indies and in the Wisden Trophy Series last year. They wouldn't talk about him leading the Tridents from a poor start to lifting the title a year ago in the Caribbean. And Jason, like everyone else, like Keswick himself, has experienced the ups and downs of international sport. Keswick is nodding because he knows what it's like in the Caribbean. They will say you're Vincey so-and-so, depending on how things go in different parts of the Caribbean. And then the next thing you know, you perform well, and you're considered the greatest things in sliced bread. That's just the way of the world.
I see. Well, Fazay, I know you've got to leave us very, very soon.
Indeed.
I think we got another call coming in. Yes. Hello. Welcome, Mason and guest.
Hey, good night.
Good night to you, sir.
Good night to you and your panel.
Sure.
I want to support the last caller that called.
Yes.
Holder is not a number four batsman. Mm. And it hurts me to see Holder come into bat at number four and then Ashley Nurse at number five. When we have Shamar Brooks and the same Jonathan Carter in the pavilion sitting there watching, we need to get our batting straightened out. And as the caller said, the tail is too long. It needs to be shortened.
Mason,
I saw Jason Holder get LB, and he bat was nowhere near the ball at all. Mm. These fellas have to take a leaf out of Pollard's book and watch the ball and hit the ball. They are just swiping like Ashley Nurse, just swiping and not watching the ball. Mm. You don't play cricket like that.
Mm. Well, thanks for your contribution. Keep the calls coming. Fazer, I know you got to go. Your final words, and I know that Keswick wants to respond to the call. Yes, Fazer.
Yeah, sure. I wouldn't get in the way of Keswick, but because I have to wrap up my contribution, just to say that I'm actually looking forward, because I believe Ashley Gray, the Australian author, is going to be joining you shortly.
Very, very,
he's talking about that very revealing book about the Rebel Tour of 1982-83 of West Indies players to South Africa. And I look forward to that because I think it is something that I think many people in the Caribbean will want to have a look at because it's not something that we in the Caribbean spend a lot of time as far as introspection. We often try to pretend that things that are considered unfavorable to us, we push it in the background. But there'll be quite a bit of information out of that book that I think will open quite a few eyes when it comes to those who can access that publication.
30 seconds, Fazer. Who's going to win this? CPL 2020.
It looks as if TKR are going to win it. But last year we saw Guyana Amazon Warriors winning everything all the way to the final. I think as with every T20 tournament, it's wide open when you get to a final. But at this point, TKR look like champions, Andrew.
And it looks as if the Tridents and the Patriots will not make it to the final four.
At this point, it looks that way unless something really remarkable happens. But again, it's T20 cricket and anything could happen. But as I said, you're a champion today. You're a GOAT tomorrow. That's how it goes.
All right. Fazer, thanks very much. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Take care.
Enjoy the rest of your evening. We got another call coming in. Keswick, you want to respond? Let's take the call, Keswick, and then you respond. Thanks, Fazer. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good night, Mr. Mason, to you and your guests.
Good night.
Hello. My problem with the Tridents, right? I think that it's a management problem because you have Sheho batting at opening the batting. He's failing all the time.
Right.
Why not shift him into the middle and see what happens if put some bites to open? For me, I will let Ashley Nurse open, try something. Right? Let Ashley open the Johnson Trans and put Sheho at number five because he's a better batsman. But I think that we are not playing cricket with horses for courses. We just play cricket and we are too rigid in our batting order and we don't think about the situation. Holder, for me, should come at number six. He should not be batting at four. He's not a good batsman to really play at number four, because when you play a hole at four and he out, there's a problem. why is Shamar Brooks still in the pavilion? And you got people failing religiously and still not getting in and still playing. It is wrong. We had situations where we had a good start, and before you send somebody to continue the chase, you send somebody to slow down. You put too much pressure on Cole Mears. How good is Raymond Wee for a batsman?
Ma'am, you made a very, very good contribution. I want to thank you and enjoy the rest of the evening. Yes, Keswick, I know you want to respond to a couple of things.
Yeah, well, it's really three things, but I have to go soon, so I'll just drop them and go.
Sure, fine.
Fazia made a comment a while ago when he said he was waiting for Liverpool to win for years, and then they win when Corona hit. I saw a meme the other day when they actually won, and somebody make a meme, and they were like, well, it's been years Liverpool wanted to win. They're winning in Corona time. And then they put up Zouk's flag, and they were like, wow, Zouk's is doing well. It's Corona time, you know? So it leads you to think one thing. Is Zouk's going to win this year in Corona time? I'm going to tell you one thing. If Zouk's wins CPL this year in the Corona time, I don't mind Corona, you know, passing by next year. You know? But another thing. The caller who said that he don't think that Ashley is good enough to bat at five or Jace is not good enough to bat at four, I wouldn't second that caller. I think that these guys should be floaters in T20 cricket.
I agree with you.
Because you can't tell me that you have, okay, for example, Trinidad. Let's use Trinidad. So Trinidad is batting 130 for three. Larry Bravo to come in next with five overs to go, right? And Pollard is in the hot. Bravo is in the hot. You're going to send Bravo because he's a batsman, or you're going to send Pollard to go hit the ball? So are you going to send Shamar Brooks, or are you going to send Ashley who can hit the ball? People don't understand these things. They are floaters in T20 team. These guys bat anywhere. They could bat at three. They could bat at four. They could bat a five according to the position of the game. You understand? And that is what people need to understand.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that.
I can't understand why people is pressured. Listen, I can't understand why people pressure Jesu so much. Jesu is the best. I always tell people we have two test players here in the Caribbean that I think could be up there with every single test player in the world. Jason and Chase is probably our two best test players. That's how I see it. If I'm wrong, anybody could say I'm wrong. Chase came in and Chase said to people, I am not a test player. I am not a T20 player. I'm not a wonder player. I'm a cricketer. And I love that comment. A lot of people might not understand. But what he's saying, I could adapt to any situation there is. We basically call Weston Chase Shoaib Malik because he's playing a Shoaib Malik role.
Yes.
He's getting in on the wickets. And when he gets in, he hits the ball where he wants to hit the ball, playing proper cricket shots.
I agree.
His strike rate is at 120, 125. That's perfect for his style of play. And he comes in, bowl two or three overs for 13, which is perfect for my team, which I'm very happy with. And that's what people is not understanding. Your team is doing bad, they kill you. You do good, they lift you up on a pedestal. What these people in Barbados have to understand, the guys are going through a bad patch. This is when they need you. They need you to support them. They don't need you to pull them down and say, JC ain't good. Ashley ain't good. Mate, Ashley strike the ball so much time for West Indies in the back end. He did it for Barbados a lot of times last year. So not because the guys are having a bad run now. Don't jump on their back and kill them. They need you to support them. No matter what, they need you to support them. Because at the end of the day, when they win, you stand up and you're the one that say, oh, we are the Tridents.
Powerful words.
They need support. They're not doing well right now, but they need support.
Powerful words from you. Just before you go.
You understand?
Continue.
Yeah, they need the support. It's like, that's why I love St. Lucia Zooks. Because it's like, it'll sound funny for me to say this, but St. Lucia Zooks know what's losing. So the two games we lost this year, we didn't kill ourselves. We came back to the hotel, sit down, and we have a drink, and we talk about it. Because we know what losing is. But a lot of team here don't know what losing is. Guyana don't know what losing is. Barbados don't really know. Jamaica don't really know. So when they lose, they take it to heart. But we know what losing is. We know what we came from a place whereby we lose 11 on a chart. Year after year. You understand? So, I mean, we're in a good space now. And the only reason why we're in a good, in a good space now is because our thought process and how we analyze the game and our strategies behind the game is a bit better than other teams. And that's the reason why we're doing well.
In your final wrap-up, in fact, we've got another 20 minutes or so left, just about 22 minutes left in the show. Do you think you've got the goods to go all the way, Keswick, and win it for the Zooks?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. The guys have been doing well. Honestly, the mood. I mean, when you're in a team that have me and Fletcher in it, you're always going to be comfortable. Because we make the guys happy. We make them comfortable. And no matter win or lose, we always put a smile on everybody's face. You understand? So we've been doing well. We have three bowlers presently in the top five for most wickets. Nabi, Scott, and myself. So we're doing well. We have guys up there for most runs. So we're doing well as a team. We're doing well as a team. And that's what we need, team performance. And a lot of people say there's no I in team, but I don't think so. There is I in team. Because if I don't do well, the team don't do well. Chase has to stand up now. Nabi has to stand up. And if an individual don't do well, the team is not going to do well. So for the team to do well, each and every individual in the team have to do well.
I see.
For a team to succeed.
Well, Keswick, I want to thank you. The latest score, the Guyana Amazon Warriors are 21-1 from 5 overs and 1 ball, chasing 93. So they require another 72 from 89 balls with a strike rate of 4.85. So we'll try and keep you updated on that. Keswick, we want to thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Always full of energy. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Definitely. Thanks a lot, man. It's a pleasure.
All right. Let's go and take another call. Hello. Welcome, Mason and guests.
Hi. Good night.
Good night.
Okay. What I want to say, everybody is disappointed with Barbados. I'm the happiest man in the world that Barbados is in this position, and I'll tell you why. The first thing, Jason Holder, this is the first time I see Jason Holder captain aside. He bowled out Rashin Khan and them early, and then he struggled. Second, the unfair that little youngster young. You have to give him a chance to bat. They never give him a chance. You cannot continue with Shane Hope failing in series after series, whatever cricket they're playing, and continue to play him. You can't have those other guys sitting on a bench. Trinidad is winning, and they're changing up the team. Barbados is losing, and they continue playing the team. Why everybody so mad? It is clearly this first thing. What's his name? Reefer. Reefer should be not in the team. Reefer should be out long time. Hope should be out, and the guy from New Zealand should be out. Those guys are doing nothing. Why would you continue to play people that done nothing? How are you going to win? Tell me.
All right, well, thanks for your contribution. All right, thanks for your contribution. Toby, I know that you said you were going to spend half an hour with us. You're looking tired. I'm not going to keep you too much longer. Yeah, I know, and of course, you've got a long trip to Bangladesh. So we're not going to keep you too much longer. My final question to you, though, Toby, you've been around, of course, for a long time as a batting coach. Why is it that we play better T20 cricket as opposed to Test cricket in 50 over?
Well, I think we've gone through a period where obviously we won the World Cup a couple of times in recent years. I think it's been a bit of a mix of having the right types of players at the right time. And those players going to the IPL, getting really good experience playing against the world's best. So I think it's a combination of having really good T20 players, getting good experience in the best competitions around the world. And then you know, it made an outstanding team, didn't it? I mean, the win in 2012 in Sri Lanka, and then obviously more recently in India. When you look at that side, and it had a format, didn't it? You know, get off to a really good start. You had Marlon. If we lost early wickets, he'd rebuild. And then you had those brilliant hitters coming in anywhere from 6 down to 9, guys who could clear the ropes. You know, there were always people who could hit, and we would out-hit, in terms of boundaries, we would always hit, out-hit the opposition. I mean, there were certain teams we ended up playing against. I remember on a tour in Dubai a few years ago, playing against Pakistan, and Mickey Arthur for Pakistan, I think we had one boundary, it was about 90 yards, determined to make sure, he was determined to try and make the West Indies try and clear big boundaries. And the tactic for them clearly was ones and twos, and we fell into the trap of trying to clear boundaries that even West Indians couldn't clear. So, you know, but when you're on grounds where the ICC picks the boundary size, West Indies generally are always going to hit more boundaries than any other team. And there's no doubt in recent years we've had the players to do that. As I said, from six down to nine, everyone could clear a rope. So that's where I think we're at. Still got fantastic T20 players. But it is, as has been said all evening, it's about adapting to the surface that you're on, playing the pitch that you're on and the bowlers you're playing and playing smart cricket. And if these pitches at the moment demand that you've got to get in at the top of the order and then start to go hard later on, that's what you've got to do. You've got to win your matches however you win the matches. And then when you get on your flat pitches, you can go hard up front and post big scores, 180, 200. But these aren't the pitches, it appears, to be posting those types of scores. So you've just got to get what you believe is a match-winning score on that surface.
Toby, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. We're past your bedtime now, so get some rest and we'll hopefully talk to you again pretty, pretty soon. Thanks very much. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Lovely to speak to you. Thanks, Andrew. And good night to all the guests.
All
there.
Right.
Thanks
good.
Very much.
So Toby Radford is there. We got a call. We also have Ashley Gray on the line. He's from Sydney, Australia, to talk about The Unforgiven in a minute. But in the meantime, let's go and take a call. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Mason.
Yes, how are you?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm better now, I'm hearing you.
Well, I'm looking forward for the Zoots to win this cup.
So wait, so how is that? Why is that? Are you not a Trident supporter?
I am, but the Zoots playing better cricket for me.
Okay. Now, talk to me about the weekend. I mean, on Saturday, you should have won against the TKR, then on Sunday against the Zoots. My mother told me yesterday when I saw it that she couldn't eat her rice and peas. How did you feel on the weekend when the Tridents lost?
Because they should not be bowling, given they're all of them sixes. They should try and bowl at the man's feet.
Oh, bowl at the feet?
Yes, bowl at the man's feet. Give some Yorkers instead of bowling like that.
Yeah.
And give the man the ball that he can make sixes.
Oh, dear.
So that's what happens. They try and get him in at least two twos or ones. So I am looking forward for the Zoots.
So the Tridents may not even make it. So then you're looking forward to the Zoots. Thanks for your contribution. All right, let's go and talk to Ashley Gray all the way in Sydney, Australia. Hello to Ashley. How are you? Okay. Just turn your mic on, Ashley. Ashley?
Gotcha. Yep, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear. What time is it in Sydney, Australia?
It's 9:45 in the morning of the following day.
On the following day.
let me tell you that the world hasn't changed too much. You haven't missed out on anything so far.
All right. Now, you wrote this book, and it's interesting, The Unforgiven, that rebel tour in South Africa. What would have influenced you to have written such a book?
Yeah, well, it all went back to 2003, Andrew, when I was doing some reporting on the Australian tour of the West Indies back then. And there was a one-day game in Sabina Park. And after the game, I was in a taxi. And the taxi driver recognized that from the badge that I was wearing that I was a media guy. And he said, look, there's a guy called Richard Austin. And I remembered him, because he played World Series cricket in Australia. And he said to me, look, you know, I can take you to him. He's just down the road here in Middle Kingston, and he'll be sitting in the gutter and he'll be begging you for money because he is homeless and he is on sort of his last legs. And I was like, wow, this is crazy, because it certainly wouldn't happen in Australia like that or in England, you know, the Test cricketers who are so revered always end up at least having some kind of social and financial net that gets them through, you know, in their latter years. But so he took me there, and it was true. Richard was actually in the gutter. He was sitting in the gutter. He was running with a gang. Ooh. He was sipping on a plastic bottle of rum, and he told me he wanted money for cocaine. So I then asked him about why he was in that situation, and he said it all came back to South Africa. He'd gone to South Africa with rebel tourists, and when he came back with all this money in his pocket, he was ostracized by his countrymen because they believed he'd taken blood money to tour South Africa, which was obviously an apartheid country at that point. And it was felt that by going there, these guys, these rebel tourists, were bolstering the regime and giving succor to what was a regime that discriminated against people of his own color. So that's why there was the backlash. And he said to me that, you know, he'd suffered badly because of that. And I knew then that there was a bigger story. But it's only in the last couple of years that I've got around to actually telling that story. So I traveled to the Caribbean 2 years ago. I went to Barbados, Jamaica, Nevis, Trinidad, to speak to all the guys and find out what had happened to them and how this one decision that was made in their 20s impacted so much on their lives.
Mm. And some of the other people that you'd have spoken to, Lawrence Rowe, had a difficult time, of course, in Jamaica. Herbert Chang, what's happening to him? You would have spoken to him. Alvin Kalichuran, Derek Parry, Fruit Bacchus. I mean, you also said to me that you spoke to Peggy Clark, the wife, of course, of that fantastic fastball. Who's left us. And Hartley Allen and people like Collis King. Let's start with Herbert Chang in Jamaica. What was it like talking to him?
Well, it was tough to find him because he sort of lurked in the shadows for a long time. And if you Google his name, you'll just find these references to him being, you know, having gone insane and wandering the streets and being homeless and all this kind of negative stuff. So, it took me a while to actually find him. And when I did, he was indeed in Greenwich Town in Kingston, but he is being looked after by his family. And he had a rough time after the rebel tours because he felt that he wasn't paid and that his money was lost and taken from him. And it triggered a mental breakdown.
Mm.
And what happened after that was that he found out that he had a form of schizophrenia, which he now takes medication for. So you can speak to him and he will give you lucid answers, but the problem is that they're also a little bit slurred because he's been taking medication for so long. And it's kind of sad, but he has made the best of it. And as I said, his family look after him. He loves his Pepsi Cola. He likes to drink as many bottles as he can a day. He walks up and down the street. He seems happy in his own world. And if you ask him about cricket, he's still very knowledgeable, you know. So and I keep in contact with him and his family. And, hopefully one of the good things about this book has been that I know some cricket authorities have now tried to contact him and get him back into the fold in some way or other. So that's mm-hmm. great.
What was it like talking to Everton Mattis, who took perhaps the best catch we've ever seen at Kensington Oval?
Yeah, okay, right. When was that, may I ask, Andrew?
Australia.
When did he take that catch?
Where was it? Is it? Just trying to remember now. Was it Richard Austin? I think it was Richard Austin.
Richard Austin took the great catch.
Okay, yeah, it was Richard Austin. Richard Austin in Barbados, right there at Kensington Oval, yes. I think it was Yallop was the batsman. Yes.
Frame Yallop. He flipped it off his toes, yes. Right. Brilliant catch, yeah. Mm-hmm. Clive Lloyd was so impressed by the catch. Well, he actually didn't even think that Richard Austin had taken the catch.
Right.
And he was like, Richard, go and chase that ball. And then Richard just produced the ball from his pocket.
Right, right. Skipper. Yes, Richard, yes.
Mm. Mm. But Everton Mattis.
And I put a sad story with Richard Austin as well, but talk about Mattis first.
Yeah, sure. Everton Mattis is a wonderful guy. He came back from South Africa, a decision he now regrets because he had played four tests for the West Indies in 1981 against England, and he had done quite well, but he was never given another opportunity, and I think that really rankled, that really really sort of upset him, and that's one of the reasons why he went on the tours of South Africa. But he came back and he found that in Jamaica he was hassled a lot by the police. Oh, there was one incident where he feared for his life. You know, he was ostracized by his old Rastafarian friends because he had been a Rasta at one point. Yeah, he found that life was very difficult. So he decamped to New York. But in New York, he fell into drug use and drug dealing. And, yeah, he had a pretty horrible time there. And now he lives in Poughkeepsie in upstate New York. And he's got a beautiful partner and and he's got his children, and you know, he's discovered Christianity, and he's got his life back on track, and it's a real redemption story for Everton. But yeah, he went through some really hard times, and he even got shot at one point, and he now walks with a limp.
Oh dear.
So this was all, he reckons, because of South Africa and the way he was treated when he came back from there. But of course, on the other hand, you have to realise that at the time in the Caribbean, there was a massive school of thought that by going to South Africa, these guys had betrayed their fellow countrymen. They betrayed the Caribbean. They betrayed people like Michael Manley, who was Jamaican Prime Minister at the time, who'd got up in the United Nations and spoken eloquently against apartheid, and so there was a big current of thought in the Caribbean, you know, going down to Burnham in Guyana and Tom Adams in Barbados, who that these leaders of the respective countries who were very very against apartheid. So this was the current of thought that was existing in the Caribbean at the time, and these guys were seen to have betrayed that.
Doc, any questions for Ashley?
Good night, Ashley. It's good that you've written the book, because it's something that we all need to know a lot about. When you reflect on the book, it seems like a pretty sad, you know, a lot of broken life there after going to South Africa. Do you think on reflection that maybe the society, the Caribbean society, was too hard on our players who went to South Africa, considering that players from other countries went to South Africa and they seem to have fared a lot better after and assimilated into normal life and society?
Yes. Well, this is a point that Lawrence Rowe made to me especially. He said that what really irked him in the 80s was when he saw England coming over to the West Indies, I think in 86, and you had Graham Gooch and Embury, guys who'd just played in South Africa 3 years before, but they only suffered 3-year bans, whereas the West Indian guys who went to South Africa suffered life bans. So the treatment was completely different. And ultimately, you get guys like Jeffrey Boycott, who just got a knighthood, and he went to South Africa. You had Graveney, who was heading up English cricket at one time, and he helped organise the tours. So yeah, there was definitely different treatment according to the white rebels versus the black rebels as such. But obviously it was different in a sense in that people thought in the Caribbean that these guys going to South Africa and taking, you know, $100,000 US, which was a lot of money back then, 70 or 80 times what a Jamaican could expect to earn in a year at that point in time. So it was irresistible amounts of money. But by going there, they were helping to legitimize apartheid, and obviously people felt very badly about that in the Caribbean. But on the other hand, there was a school of thought that and I spoke to Sir David Simmons in Barbados, who was in the government at the time of the tours, and he actually welcomed back Desmond Haynes and Malcolm Marshall when they had refused to go on the tours of South Africa. They'd knocked back the money, and he sort of lauded them as heroes at the airport when they returned to Bridgetown. And he said to me that in Barbados, at least, the feeling was that, yes, okay, we'd punish these guys by banning them for cricket from Test cricket. But that should really be it. That's enough. You know, we shouldn't ostracize them, and we shouldn't go further than that, because sense of punishment is enough. One term of punishment is enough. Mm. Whereas in somewhere like Jamaica, perhaps because Jamaica had a deeper sense of black oppression, because it had initiated the first slave rebellions, and it was also a bigger country in a way, obviously a lot more people, a lot more developed in that kind of way. The reactions went beyond just a life ban from cricket. It became a social ostracism, mm. which contributed to these guys' ultimate decline, and which perhaps was in some ways over the top. But as I said, you know, there was such a wellspring of hostility, you know, because these guys were considered to have been race traitors in a way. So, I mean, I just hope that the book gives some of the guys closure. I don't like to come down on either side of the argument. It's more about how this decision affected these guys and how their futures panned out.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually,
Doctor, we don't have any more time, really. It's a pity. Sure. What we're going to do, we promise you, Ashley Grater, to come back and do a part two. This is a very, very interesting story, because we'd love to know, of course, the reaction to the book. How can we get the book? And we could even want to talk about your conversations with people like David Murray and Bernard Julian, sure, Alvin Greenidge, and of course, Colin Croft. I mean, this should be very interesting. So what we're going to do, we're going to promise you, we're going to have a part two. So please, please make sure that you're available. This, I find, is very interesting. We want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. The Unforgiven, of course, the Revel Tour in the early 80s. Thanks very much to you, Ashley Gray, from Sydney, Australia.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right.
It's been a pleasure to be on the show.
All right. So we'll do a part two. Quickly before I go, Barbados 92 all out. In over number 10, the team from Ghana, the Amazon Warriors, are doing very well. They are 46 for two. So it means that they require another 47 runs with 65 balls left, a rate of 4.33. So it looks as if the Tridents are going to lose again. We want to thank all those who participated. Of course, Toby Radford, Fazer Muhammad, it was great to have him. Keswick Williams was absolutely brilliant. Ashley Gray. Of course, we want to talk and thank Roger Harper for coming through. We also want to thank you, Dr. Ford. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a better tomorrow. It's good night.